There's been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Punch it.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
You know, Jeremy, in the 5+ years that we've been doing this podcast together, we've asked ourselves a lot about Star Wars characters and who we identified with personally. And
yes,
I think that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, as a younger gentleman, you identified with Luke Skywalker.
I did.
Yeah. Yes. And I was very much a Han Solo guy growing up. And then at some point, you know, I started to identify more with the Sir Alec Guinness version of Obi-Wan, which I believe you would say the same as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And Jeremy, I'm just going to say, after the...
I feel like you're setting me up for something.
No. I mean, okay. This is just another very great way for us to be transparent with our listeners and how we grow in our own fandom. Of course, as we're recording this, this is the day after the season two finale of The Mandalorian, which, you know, another filler episode, but we can talk about that at some other point. But I found myself, Jeremy, now identifying even more so with another Star Wars character.
Oh, who?
So I got to say, for those of you that are somehow not familiar with where The Mandalorian fits on the timeline, we're roughly 5 or so years beyond Return of the Jedi, before the events of The Force Awakens. And Jeremy, as I watched and rewatched the final episode of The Mandalorian entitled The Rescue, I found myself identifying with a larger, fatter Bib Fortuna.
I did too.
I said, "My God, Bib, what's happened to you in those 5 years?" And I just, I think he's my spirit animal, Star Wars character at this point. It's obviously been a rough 5 years for the fellow. But I thought, my goodness, he has been using the same COVID diet plan as I have for these past 9 months.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with a throne, food, and booze.
Don't forget the dancing women.
Yes, that too. He was living his perfect life now.
Oh my goodness.
Boba Fett had to come in and just screw it all up, man.
Truly, the nerve. The nerve. What a jerk. Get over yourself, Boba. Oh my goodness. Well, listen, my little tauntauns, welcome to this episode of Unmistakably Star Wars. We are so glad that you are joining us. Of course, I am joined with the original big deal, Mr. Jeremy Scott. Jeremy, officially welcome to the USW pod.
Thanks, man. It's good. I'm excited to talk a little James Earl Jones in a little bit. And of course, Mando. And, there's been a lot going on with Star Wars, hasn't there?
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, we want to obviously save the bulk of our Closer Look conversation for the series that we're in, which is the Best of the Rest series, where we're taking a look at film and television work of Star Wars actors in non-Star Wars roles. But yeah, before we get there, we had a couple of big things happen in the past week or so. We had, of course, the season finale of The Mandalorian, and we also had just really an unveiling of all kinds of Star Wars projects that are in the works, was announced by Disney and Lucasfilm. And so we don't need to spend a whole lot of time breaking those down, Jeremy, but let's first talk about The Mandalorian. What are some of your thoughts and some of the emotions you experienced as season two came to its finale?
Yeah, thankfulness. I know it sounds ridiculous, but Carl, our very own Carl, he texted us last night. I haven't even responded to him because I've been trying to like think through my thoughts. Not because I don't like him. I mean, I don't like him, but that's beside the point. Just kidding, Carl. I love you. But Carl asked a great question. He was like, in the last episode, Jeremy, you said, you know, you were worried that Luke would overshadow who the show is about, which is, you know, Din and Grogu.
And this is before we even knew Luke Skywalker was going to be part of the equation.
Before, we were just chatting about it. Yeah. And like, what if Luke shows up or, you know, whoever shows up. And I just was really afraid of that. And I actually was, as the episode played out and Luke showed up, I had a dumb, like, 12-year-old grin on my face, you know, and but the emotional, you know, resonance of the episode was still tied up with Din Djarin and, and the child Grogu.
Right.
And I knew that they had succeeded when I was emotional about their departure. And Luke was obviously a part of that, but Luke fit in. It made sense. I know a lot of people are kind of grumpy about some of the they're grumpy about a lot of things, Devin, but they were grumpy about the CG, and I get that, the CG of Luke, but, you know, it was so brief. It wasn't like a full episode with Luke. It was just this brief moment, and it really worked for me. What about you? About the episode in total, but Luke Skywalker, you know, showing up, like, how'd you feel about it?
Yeah, well, I think there's several things that I really appreciated about it, and, yeah, you're so right, first off, Jeremy, right, that it's... Star Wars fans can sometimes be like the proverbial kid at the birthday party or Christmas morning. We're just like, I don't really want a sweater. I might need a sweater, but I don't really want a sweater. And nothing is ever good enough. Yeah. So beyond that, I was shocked when I saw the single X-Wing come in. I knew it was him, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But up until that point, I didn't even know if we were going to get a Jedi that Grogu had attempted to communicate with and call from the previous episode. I didn't know if that was going to go down. But I thought that the way that Luke was reintroduced into the timeline was perfectly great. I didn't have any problems with it. I thought that as far as that character within the episode, I didn't feel that it stole anything away from the storyline, or certainly not. In fact, to the contrary, we find that the connection and bonding between Din Djarin and Grogu is so strong that it wasn't just I'm running from the helmeted guy to go with a Jedi, but there was this really tender moment. And, you know, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but one of the things that I got out of this moment where Grogu reaches out to touch the Mando's helmet and then later his face was very, in my opinion, reminiscent of the whole Han Solo, Ben Solo thing in The Force Awakens.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I truly love that. You know, listen, as far as the CGI, I get creeped out even with the best CGI, right?
Sure.
And so did I think it was done quote unquote well? I don't know. It's better than I could have done on my Mac. so thank the maker for that. But yeah, well, ultimately, did it detract? Really? I think that's always the question with like the mocap and the CGI stuff. Like, did it detract from the film? And I will say, it only detracted with like the initial glance and trying to figure things out. Like, do I like this rendering? Do I not? But like, I've watched the episode since my initial viewing, and it doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me at all. And so I thought it was an interesting pick. I am fascinated what that might mean for bringing Luke back into this part of the timeline for future stories between now and The Force Awakens. I'm curious, though, because we got kind of a little tip of the cap to Kevin Feige as well with kind of this post-credits preview for some of you that didn't stick around and just didn't watch after the credits rolled. You may want to go back and check that out there. So there's your spoiler warning. What did you think about that, Jeremy? Is it good that now we're kind of taking a bag of tricks from the Marvel world and doing this? Does it fit in the Star Wars universe?
Sure. I mean, they did a little bit of that with Boba Fett's reveal in season one, where he walks up at the end of I think it was like episode 4 or 5. I can't quite remember. You know, the Book of Boba Fett is interesting to me in terms of I loved how they introduced it, because, you know, they had the big stakeholders meeting earlier in the week where they revealed many of the projects they're working on, and they held back on that one to be this mid-credits or end-credits reveal. I liked that. I don't have a problem with that necessarily. A lot of people expect that kind of stuff now. In terms of the Book of Boba Fett as something I want to see, I'll just say this. It's all Star Wars is Star Wars. I enjoy engaging all of it. I'll be there when it releases. It's not at the top of the list of things I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Anyone that's listened to this show any amount of time know that that number one's Obi-Wan. Number two is probably Ahsoka. And then followed by maybe Andor, Rangers of the New Republic, a little bit tied. And of course, you got Bad Batch, interesting. Visions, interesting. They mentioned Lando, interesting. The Acolyte is, I'm finding it very compelling. The Book of Boba Fett is kind of down there on the list. Mm. Like, it's down there with Lando. And that, I'm not saying, I don't say that necessarily negatively. I just find some other stories to me personally more compelling. And that's what's beautiful about this age of Star Wars that we're in. What about you? One, did you like that mid or end? I can't even remember if it was the end credits or the mid credits, whatever the hell
it
was.
Yeah, I believe it was the end credits.
Okay. Did you like that? And then is that a show you're interested in?
Okay. So first, I guess, like you said, it's kind of like the thing. It's not really for me. Like, I don't know. Anyway, I guess if you're using it to announce other projects, that's kind of a cool way to announce it, especially like you mentioned, like we had the big shareholders meeting, and we'll talk about some of the announcements made in that. And so I guess it was cool like that. Yeah, as far the Book of Boba Fett, to me, Jeremy, sounds super biblical and legalist. obviously, I'm assuming it's about the people that are in his book that he has trying to get for bounties.
Maybe.
Will I watch it? Sure. I think that they have a lot more work to do on their end to pull me in to love that.
Yeah.
But of course I'm going to watch it. I mean, What the hell else am I going to do as a middle-aged man?
I say that to myself every day. I've heard that it's like maybe potentially a limited series. So just a season. I'm okay with that. I think if they're trying to sell me on a multiple season series, I'm kind of like, I like Boba Fett. I have a t-shirt with Boba Fett on it. Right. But I'm not into him necessarily as a character. I don't know why. It just never, he never really, I find many more people associated with Mandalore to be more compelling. Din Djarin, the chief, one of them, but Bo-Katan, like I would have been much more interested in a show with her. Like the Book of Bo-Katan would be much more interesting to me.
Right.
So I don't know, that's just where I'm at. But like, if you're sitting there listening to this show and you want to strangle me and Devin, don't. We like it. It's just not the top of the heap, the list. It's not the thing we're looking forward to the most.
Well, and you bring up a couple of important things with that, Jeremy. I think one is this idea of a limited series. And, you know, most TV shows, right, they know at some point they're going to have a final episode. And so I would love to know. Would I love to know? I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't want to know. But what we do know is that The Mandalorian is going to have a certain amount of seasons. Like, there's going to be a final episode to The Mandalorian. It'll be interesting to see how many seasons that becomes. You know, some of the great titles that we know from streaming series, a lot of them end three seasons. There are certainly some, like Game of Thrones, that goes on to an eighth season, although I guess we could argue about quality control. But nonetheless, it will be interesting to see if this season really becomes a seedbed for spinoffs and other stories, or just it kind of tells its story and that's it. The other thing that you bring up, though, are the other limited series that are out there. And in addition to some of the other film projects that are out there that Disney and Lucasfilm announced. So let me just kind of walk through these, Jeremy. I'm sure our listeners are probably at least somewhat familiar with the big announcements, but just kind of walk through these. So we know that we've got a couple of more streaming projects coming to Disney Plus. Yes. We've got, in addition to the Book of Boba Fett, which apparently comes out December 2021, we've got the Rangers of the New Republic.
Yes.
Initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I'm still open to hearing more about it. It's not, because it's a little vague, I'm not fully on board. I do know, like, we do know that it is associated with the same timeline as The Mandalorian and Ahsoka. So there's been talk about how this show, Ahsoka and Mandalorian, will culminate in a big event. I don't know if that's a Disney Plus movie or a movie in the theaters.
Right.
So for that reason, I find it interesting. I need to know more.
Yeah.
What are they doing? Who are they? What is their purpose? And so that's where I'm at right now is just, I just want to know more about it. And I think once they give a few more tidbits, I'll be able to say, yes, I'm on board, or, I mean, I'll watch it, but it's not at the top of the list. What about you? Where do you feel about it?
Well, you know, here's what I think. When I see the logo for Rangers of the Republic, it's kind of got this military flair about it. It kind of almost looks like what persons in the military would look at as like flight wings.
Yes.
Historically, in the real world, Rangers, dating back probably well before the actual American Revolutionary War, that the Queen's Rangers, and now the U.S. Army has its Special Force Rangers, but Rangers historically have been a band of like super soldiers, small units, yeah, small squads, doing very hardcore missions. I guess someone would probably even look at it maybe as like a Navy SEALs approach. So I'm fascinated to see if that is indeed some of what we perhaps get. If so, I'm all in, asterisk. I kind of want to see something like that, but from the First Order perspective, or the Empire's perspective.
That's
but nonetheless, I'll go with that. So, and the next up, and this, there was positive reaction to this, but I'm trying to hold back a little bit of my exuberance. We've been told that there's going to be a limited series featuring Ahsoka. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm really interested in what they do with that. And she is easily one of my favorite characters. She's in, I would say, top five, like in Star Wars characters. So, like Dave Filoni, I'm very protective. I'm excited, but you know how you get a little nervous because it's something you really care about and you just don't want it to get messed up. That's how I feel about Ahsoka. I think of everything besides the Obi-Wan series.
Yeah.
It sounds ridiculous. I'm a little nervous. I'm like, don't screw it up. You know, I want it to be really good because I really adore the character of Ahsoka. She has become, it's amazing to me how over the course of the Rebels run. I mean, I kind of didn't like her at the beginning of Clone Wars, really grew to like her during the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And then it was Rebels where I really grew to like appreciate the character,
right?
Some of the things she said, some of her character arc moments really resonated with me. And it's amazing to me how quickly she has risen to the top of as one of my favorite characters. I would put her up there with Ben Solo, Kylo Ren, and Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke Skywalker. I mean, she's that big of a deal to me. And I was as excited to see her as I was Luke. I really was. So I really am nervous. I just want it to be good. I'm excited, though. I'm excited. What about you? Are you kind of – where do you fall? We've never really talked about this on, like, how you feel about Ahsoka, where she's at in terms of characters you're interested in.
Well, listen, I can appreciate any woman that could kick my ass, Jeremy, so let me just put that out there. Listen, I absolutely adore Ahsoka, very much the same way, though, like the – the young Padawan, teenage Ahsoka, and it's probably just because I work with teenagers. Sorry, former students listening to this podcast. current students as well. I did not like that version of Ahsoka. The Ahsoka that we get latter in the Clone Wars, certainly in Star Wars Rebels, and of course now, yes, and yes. But here's the asterisk, here's the caution, right? And it's very much with what you just mentioned with her and the Obi-Wan series, limited series that we know we're going to get. Ooh, those are areas that it's like a minefield, man. And there's so much toxicity in fandom to a point where it's like, man, people were like still, as recently as last week, bashing Rian Johnson for The Last Jedi. And I'm not here to promote or de-promote that film, but like, I just want this experience to be good. I want it so it can be fun, so we can sip our cocoa and eat our popcorn and just enjoy the galaxy together. So
yeah, absolutely. And I do wonder with The Mandalorian, Ahsoka, and Rangers of the New Republic, if those three are going to intertwine in a way that we're going to be getting some type of retelling of the Heir to the Empire trilogy by Timothy Zahn.
Right.
Like if they're, you know, obviously Ahsoka is looking for Grand Admiral Thrawn. Ezra's a player on the board, right? So I just wonder if we're heading in that direction for a war before the war with the First Order that we get in the sequel trilogy.
Right.
I'm super curious about that. And I have a big, I almost want to say a hope that that's the direction they go in. I would love to see some sort of iteration of that story being told on Disney Plus.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, again, there's so much more on the list. We've got The Bad Batch, which is going to be an original animated series. We know that friend of the program, Dave Filoni, for those of you that don't know him personally, like I do.
God.
I know. It's true, though. We're practically pen pals. We've got what you alluded to, Jeremy, which is the Cassian Andor series that's going to come out in a year or so, which... Love Cassian, love that whole Rogue One feel, that part of the timeline. I'm looking forward to that as well. I think that, you know, some of these, when we talk about, you know, you mentioned The Acolyte, which is a mystery thriller that's going to take viewers into a galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers. I am so intrigued by that.
Yes.
I'm absolutely. So intrigued by that. As I am the Cassian Andor story, I'm looking at things like, Jeremy, things like Rangers of the New Republic, The Bad Batch, things like The Acolyte, and some of the others that are on list here, where it's really, I almost wish we Lucasfilm, Disney would have maybe waded out into these waters even before the sequel trilogy was released, because I think there's so much more freedom in storytelling when we have characters that we don't know.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think of those projects, The Acolyte is really compelling. It's the first dip into live action High Republic stuff.
Yes,
you know, we get the books coming out, goodness, in less than a month, and so we're getting into this new era of Star Wars, and I'm excited about that. And I'm especially excited to see what Leslie Hedlund, who's going to be basically the showrunner, the series lead for that.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what she does. I'm really excited. I liked Russian Doll a lot. That was on Netflix.
Yes, yes. We also, I guess, were treated to a bit of a surprise, and we weren't given too much information, with, which is the case with most of these titles here, but we're going to get a Lando series, Jeremy.
I know.
I'm going to assume that that's going to have same cast members as the Han Solo movie. Do you think that we get some more Kira? Do we get some more Infus Nest? Or do you think this is just going to be... Lando Intergalactic Gigolo.
I actually, that's one of the series that I'm the most curious about. Do you have, you know, people have mentioned, do you have both Billy Dee and Donald Glover on the show where there's like flashbacks or, you know, flash forwards or whatever? That would be interesting to me. It's like Infus Nest is a character I definitely want to see again. And we've talked about this before. Cassian Andor makes more sense to me just because of her relationship with the Rebellion and what Cassian Andor is doing.
Yeah.
I need to think back through the canon, and do we know if Lando and Han see each other again after he gets the Falcon, Empire Strikes Back and the end of Solo.
Right.
So that's intriguing to me. I think Lando has the... It gives us some promise to show us a side of the galaxy we've spent some time in terms of like Canto Bight and the casino, obviously Cloud City and what it was.
Right.
But I like that sort of high stakes, wealthy kind of world that Lando can like blend into
and trick
people and to pull one over on people. And I just hope we get to see Lobot in it. And I will say this, the comic Lando series, the limited series run of Lando, I think is still one of my favorite things.
That's a good call.
In the comics. And the story that was told, I think if they do anything like that, they are on the right track, because Lando is a really fun character, and he's a, not just fun, he's a good character.
Yes.
He's worth a show being about.
Yes, agreed. There was also mention of another animated series, Star Wars Droids, which will be great. And then really, that most of that In fact, all of that that we just talked about is going to be part of Disney Plus's lineup, which is great. Yeah. Throw me as many streaming series as you possibly can, please.
Yeah.
And then it turns to the cinematic releases, and I want to talk about what was announced and what wasn't talked about. The two that were announced, we've got Patty Jenkins, who, of course, is perhaps best known for her direction of Wonder Woman 1984, which is going to hit theaters in 2021, I believe. We've got Rogue Squadron, which I'm assuming is going to be about, loosely anyway, the group of X-Wing pilots that there was a comic book written about them in the 90s. Then we have Rogue Squadron book series. At the time, it featured Wedge Antilles. I'm probably not going to go in that direction. I just want to come out of the gate on this one, Jeremy, and say, like, I wasn't that excited about this film until I saw Patty Jenkins' personal announcement on her social media.
Yeah.
And I really want to know your perspective, because for those of you that haven't seen it, go watch it, because Patty Jenkins basically, one, it's really well shot, but two, you know, she talks about ever since that she was young, her dad was a fighter pilot in the U.S. military, and she has always had this passion, this desire to make, her words, the best fighter, the best dogfight movie ever. And now she's been handed this opportunity. And that Jeremy, that gave me so much buy-in. Your dad, Jeremy, is actually a former fighter pilot.
Yeah,
so when you heard this and saw and listened to Patty Jenkins' kind of personal insight into this, what kind of reaction did you have?
Emotional. I the way she described watching her father, it resonated with me so much as I, you know, would interact with and watch my own dad fly, and my dad flew a variation of the F-4 called the RF-4, which was a reconnaissance F-4. And so I, you know, the way she talked about it, her desire to tell a story, the passion she has behind it, it just really made me excited. It made me a little emotional because I understood where she was coming from. And just recently I was talking to my dad about, you know, it was one of the hardest things that you dealt with in the service. And he told me a story of his best friend dying. And they lived across the street from him. So while my dad was dealing with that on the military side, my mom was watching the people drive up to the house across the street to tell the wife that, you know, her husband was. So this is these types of conversations about losing people that you care about, in the military and specifically in aircraft, is something that I've been around with and have heard my whole life.
Yeah.
So I got where she was coming from immediately. I noticed her passion and her desire to tell a story about those types of people. And like you, I've always been into that type of stuff, the in Star Wars, the ship-to-ship combat. But I tell you, just hearing her talk about it, I'm excited to see such passion in somebody, and I cannot wait to see what she does with it.
Yeah, so well said. And thank you for sharing kind of that personal reveal and stuff, because that's what I had kind of imagined. When I watched that, I was also simultaneously trying to watch it through your eyes, just knowing a little bit of your backstory and your dad's backstory, and thinking, oh my goodness, that probably cuts both ways really deep.
Yeah,
I love that, though. And I think that that's one of the things that has always made Star Wars such a favorite for so many people. It's those times where we can find that personal connection.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait to see it, though.
Yeah. The other big announcement was Taika Waititi, as we assumed, was going to give us a film. And that's about all the announcement we got with that. Here's what's interesting, though. A lot of people on social media were horrified by that, because they feel that he did disservice to the film Thor Ragnarok, and how there was too much comedy in that.
Yeah.
We've seen his direction on The Mandalorian. Jeremy, any fears with Taika Waititi taking the reins of a Star Wars film?
Not at all. I think he's immensely talented. I think he's funny. I think he's what Star Wars needs. I am so excited to see what he does next. I loved Thor Ragnarok. I'm thrilled that he's involved with Star Wars still. I think people like that should be.
Yeah.
And I often wondered, is his project the culminating event of The Mandalorian, the Rangers show, and Ahsoka?
Wow.
I wonder if that's what he's working on. I have no idea, but I just, there's that wondering, like, is that what he's doing?
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. I love it. I'm looking forward to that. So here's two things that one thing that kind of made me say, huh, but here's another thing that made me say, like, oh, good. I was so concerned there for a while that there was going to be really talented directors, producers, like that, that were going to shy away from doing Star Wars because of fan backlash. And I'm so glad that we have really visionary folks like Taika Waititi, like Patty Jenkins, that are like ready to go and take the reins and tell us a story or stories. And there's part of me that's super relieved that we still have those creative forces that are willing to do that. I think that we're going to benefit from that. Jeremy, what wasn't talked about, though, nothing was said about other things in the Star Wars universe that had been previously announced. There wasn't any updates on anything from a guy that you might know called Rian Johnson, and some other stuff that had been announced. There was a point in Star Wars fandom not that long ago, Jeremy, where things were being announced, things were being pulled back. Things were being announced, things were being pulled back. Things were being in trailers, they'd never make the final cut. And so there was like this emotional whiplash for a lot of fandom. So I guess one of the things that were announced, like, to what extent, if you were a betting man, would you put all your chips in the middle and say, like, yes, these are all going to be made?
Ooh, are you talking about like the films that all those past films that have been announced?
Right.
And just still, yeah, you know, it's interesting how Lucasfilm has seemed to have shifted. And we really felt that this week. And I don't know if they made a conscious decision, I'm sure they did, to say, if we announce anything, it is something that is for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious what has happened with Rian Johnson's trilogy that was announced and trumpeted even when it was announced. And is it just because of just the backlash? And is it are they just going to stay away from that for a while? And there have been so many other things rumored. It's just fascinating to see where they're at now, where they're saying we are doing these shows, this movie, and then this director's doing another movie. That's what we got for you.
Right.
And I'm just really curious what has changed. And it seems to me like they've gotten their act together, basically. And that kind of learning to walk stage, which sadly was the sequel trilogy time period, is over. It feels like we've entered into a new stage of Star Wars, a new development time period, where they know what they want to do, they're going after it, they know what works, they know what doesn't. It's too bad that they had to use a film trilogy to figure all that out, you know, and but that's where they're at. And it just seems like they're on more, I don't know, do you see, it seems like to me that they're on more stable ground. What do you think?
I mean, I would definitely echo, and just so our listeners are clear, I want to make sure that when they hear you, you're not saying that you necessarily deplore the sequel films, but I think that like we all agree, like what wasn't there was continuity in theme and tone and so much stuff.
It just seemed you know some missteps, and you get that even in films that you love. There are missteps and things that didn't quite work the way that you would hope. But it also really seemed like that they didn't fully have a plan developed, and I think we can all look at the documentation that proves that so.
And so,
you know, it just seems like it was that. We had even talked about this on the show in past years. It just is a period of them being born, in a sense, as Star Wars creators and learning how to walk.
Right.
And it seems like they're walking now.
Yeah, and definitely from that perspective, I would echo that. I think that I do feel much more confident that what we've seen as a product of The Mandalorian and other things, we see that there seems to be a much more rhythmic, let me start that over, for fuck's sake. there seems to be a much more like rhythmic motion to things. It doesn't feel so disconnected from one another. And I think to say that things have kind of maybe taken on a new page, I think that's great. So let me ask this question then, Jeremy. For all the folks that have been hating Kathleen Kennedy this entire time, should we expect them to come now and say like, oh, go anti-Katie?
You know, I at this point in the world of social media, I don't even know what to think anymore. It's like, oh, you like her now? Great. Yeah. Oh, you don't like her? What? Like, okay. At this point, it seems I've started a new job recently, and one of the things that you think about in a role of like leadership is how do I put the right people in the right places to be one, effective, but two, where they can find fulfillment and joy and find their place.
Right.
And it really seems that's what they've been doing. Like who does what well, let's put them there.
Yes.
And, but it's also deciding, well, what is our goal? What are we working toward?
Right. Right.
And it just seems like Kennedy as a leader is started to piece it all together and think about what all she's had to piece together in her defense. Like it's crazy to get this thing moving and to take over, you know, Lucasfilm and to put these projects in place and tell these stories and just figure the rhythm and how this all works together. And it seems like probably with help, she's started to figure that out and I feel like she's leading well. And, I'm excited to see where it goes. It does, like you said, it seems like they have this rhythm where they're in sync and things are starting to work together, and that's exciting.
Yeah.
And I think The Mandalorian has done a ton to make us feel that way.
Yes, without question, without question. Wow, that was a longer conversation than I had any intention of
doing. How long are we into this episode?
Oh, my goodness. That's not a bad thing, though. It's not a bad thing when we have so much Star Wars content. I do know that so many folks did say on social media, like, my God, what a time to be alive as a Star Wars fan. The golden years are here. Well, listen, let's get on with stuff. We're going to jump into our closer look. We are in the midst of the series called The Best of the Rest. We're taking a look at Star Wars actors in their other non-Star Wars roles. So let's jump into our closer look section.
This is Bonnie Peace.
This is Jeffrey Brown.
Hi, this is Eric Walker.
This is Jason Fry.
Hi, this is Delilah S. Dawson.
And you are listening to Unmistakably.
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 Unmistakably Star Wars, the podcast.
This bickering is pointless. Why are you asking this of me?
I am here because you are here.
We will use all our resources to unravel this mystery.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
What did you say?
Same thing I always do, talk my way out of it.
I grow tired of asking this, so it'll be the last time.
How simple you make it. Life in dark as if there is one without the other.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
Oh, man, Jeremy, as I started to kind of put this show notes together on this one, I completely confess that there was part of me that felt like maybe we need to leave this particular person toward the end of the entire series and build up to it. Oh, my goodness. All right, so, dear listeners, as a reminder, we're talking about Star Wars actors who are fulfilling non-Star Wars roles. It could be film, it could be television, pretty much anything out there that doesn't have one lickety-split thing to do with Star Wars. And today, I guess we're taking the kid gloves off, Jeremy. We're going after it. Today, we're talking about James Earl Jones. That's a horrible, but my best impression of anything that would come out of James Earl Jones's mouth. My goodness. Here is a man, Jeremy. For those of you that are not too familiar with James Earl Jones's work beyond Star Wars, my goodness, there is a laundry list of films that just jump off the page when you think about not only that film, but whether his voice acting skills or his character acting skills within the film. And I'm talking, Jeremy, going back to like the late 1960s, early 1970s,
absolutely.
That are just, there's some on here that are just Hollywood classics. Perhaps most notably, like Dr. Strangelove, which, my goodness, I almost forgot that he was in that. So let's just kind of take this piece by piece. And let me ask this, Jeremy, when it comes to James Earl Jones as Vader's voice, so within the Star Wars galaxy here, do you have like a favorite Vader quote?
Oh, that's hard. I think probably the one that sort of stands out to me the most as a little kid was, "I find your lack of faith disturbing." That one really, like, don't know. It was the context of the scene, what was going on.
Yeah.
Him just basically showing the whole room who's boss. And so that one, I love that one. I found it's almost like the it's weird to say how a voice commands such respect, but in fear, like fear intertwined with respect. And that's what his voice does. And so it's interesting how almost any line that James Earl Jones utters as Darth Vader, how it evokes that in us. And so that is one thing that really stands out to you. It's probably my favorite. I'd have to look through them all, but that was when you asked that question, that was probably the first thing that came to mind.
I think mine is similar. I think if I had just like this one quote that kind of like sticks with me, it's, you know, impressive. And I think that's part of it. I think the other one though, that I probably, it's kind of my Vader go-to as far as like favorite thing though. That's kind of like his little monologue to Obi-Wan. Was like, "You should not have come back." And he just, this whole part monologue, part interplay. And, I don't know what it is. I think that was just something that always has stuck with me. Here's what I'm curious though, because, you know, there is footage you can find on YouTube and elsewhere on the interwebs where you can actually hear the audio of now David Prowse, who sadly passed on just a matter of weeks ago. But David Prowse's voice as they were filming, right? They used his voice as they were doing it. And James Earl Jones was dubbed in post-production. And, man, understanding that and hearing that, Jeremy, like, how much of an impact does James Earl Jones have on all of Star Wars just because of that voice?
Absolutely. It is iconic, isn't it? I mean, when you say it's iconic?
Yes.
I think it absolutely is this iconic, foundational aspect of Star Wars. And thankfully, James Earl Jones has gone on to do other things within Star Wars, like the stuff in Rebels and of course Rogue One.
Yes.
And so I'm glad. You can tell he's getting older and long in the tooth, but he still can bring it. And I really am thankful for that aspect of Star Wars. It's amazing how a voice can do all of that.
It really is. And I think that, you know, we think to some of his roles, and you know, I'm talking about things like The Lion King. He just does a phenomenal job voicing the character there, and also
Mufasa.
And also some of his other work. And I think, you know, he's one of those voices that is instantly recognizable wherever you hear it, whether it's in the animated version of The Lion King, whether it's Star Wars, or whether you just hear it as him, the actor, in other roles. And I think that is an incredibly cool gift to have. And I think, you know, Jeremy, you and I years ago, my goodness, what was maybe the first year that USW was even a thing, we broke down the Star Wars radio drama that was produced by NPR. Yes. And I distinctly remember at the time, like, I had to get used to the voice actor for Vader within
Brock
that series.
Peters.
Who by the way, is a phenomenal actor unto himself and has a phenomenal voice presence. But it was because I was so programmed to hear James Earl Jones's voice that it really took some adapting to get used to and enjoy that series for all its glory.
I totally agree. It's so, it's etched in our brain, right? There's even the sequence in The Rise of Skywalker where Kylo Ren goes into the fortress or the temple on Exegol, and It's just a brief moment where Palpatine says, "I've been every voice inside your head," basically. And
yes,
you know, one of that's is just Vader's, and you know it. It's Vader.
Yeah.
And it's just that's how much of an imprint that voice has had on us.
Yes. And the saga.
Yeah.
And the saga.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about James Earl Jones beyond the Star Wars galaxy. Again, his television and film career date back to the late 1960s. And, you know, let me just throw some names out, names of films that he's been in, just to kind of prove like, oh, like he has definitely put his stamp on the industry. Of course, we talked about Dr. Strangelove briefly. Each one of Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Star Wars. Here are some others that are beyond that, though. The Lion King, Field of Dreams, The Hunt for Red October, Coming to America, which is a personal favorite of mine. Thank goodness we're finally getting a follow-up to that film. We look at some other things in addition to that, though, where he is got such a strong presence on film, and though he's probably not as well known for some of those things, and Driving Miss Daisy was a solid production for him. Of course, he's had some guest appearances on things like The Big Bang Theory on television, and then we also know him in some other things where he's voiced it, whether for video games. He's also on something called Quantum Quest, say that five times quickly, that his voice acting was part of that. And then if we go kind of way back, he's on Stargate SG-1. He was on Casper for voice work. He has been on the TV series Frasier, which again is a personal favorite. Yeah. And then we can go all the way back through the 1980s and have a string of other hits that he's been part of. So, Jeremy, when it comes to James Earl Jones in a non-Star Wars role, what are some of those films that you feel are some of his best roles, whether they're just voice acting? I don't want to say just voice acting. Obviously, that's a talent unto itself. But whether it's voice alone or him as an actual physical character on the show.
Yeah, there's so much to pick from, isn't there? I mean, it's amazing what he has done in his career and accomplished. And I think the first thing that jumps out to me is how other people will talk about him as a stage actor.
Mm.
He has won the Tony for The Great White Hope, which was back in the late 60s, and then he won it again for Fences in the 80s. He was given, is I think in like 2016, 17, sometime around there, he got a special Lifetime Achievement Award at the Tony Awards. Mm. So he got another Tony Award. And to hear other actors, I've never seen him on stage, but I've seen video of him on stage. So it's different. You're not there.
Yeah.
But I think because of that voice, because of his acting abilities, but to hear other actors and specifically stage actors talk about him almost in reverence as a stage actor, I think like in some ways we have to start there just in terms of like, oh, he is known as an actor in many different like quadrants within the world of acting, not just big screen and small screen, but the stage as well.
Yes.
And so that's something that really like stands out to me. And of course, his TV work is amazing. Although I will say his TV work isn't what I remember him the most by. Mm. I think here's what's amazing to me. He can be in a movie like Field of Dreams, which I highly recommend. And his performance in that is wonderful. But then he can also be in a movie like Conan the Barbarian as the villain. And he is diabolical and evil. And I love it. If I had to say, hey, go watch something with him in it, I would put his performance in Conan the Barbarian. I know people might that have not seen it laugh just because the name Conan the Barbarian is sort of the just kind of the kind of campiness of it, but his character, he plays Thusel Doom is his character, and he is just diabolical and evil. And you know, of course, John Milius, who has written a lot of films people be familiar with, he worked with Oliver Stone on the script. Like it's a fascinating script, and there are several scenes and sequences where, especially one where James Earl Jones explains power and manipulation to Conan. And he just orders a woman to jump to her death, and she does. And it's a powerfully disturbing scene that he, as a gifted actor, carries.
Yes.
And you really grow to hate him, and you really grow to fear him in the film. And so that one, for some reason, I think maybe when I saw it the first time, I was in junior high school, and his performance, I knew who he was. I knew it was the voice of Darth Vader, but it scared me, and it sort of intrigued me because he was playing a role that I just didn't expect to see him in.
Yeah.
And then when I, especially when I juxtaposed that with Field of Dreams, or even his sort of the CIA character that he plays in the Jack Ryan films,
right?
You know, it's like, oh wait, what? This is very like, you know, discombobulating. I don't know like what to make of it, and it just that points to his talent, right?
Right.
Like he's so talented and gifted, and so I would start there. Those two films, Field of Dreams, Conan the Barbarian, is two like very polar opposite kind of things, just to show you his range.
Yeah.
What about you? Where would you start if you were to talk about James Earl Jones as a screen actor?
Well, I tell you, it's funny because Conan the Barbarian is wonderful in that way. I mean, for all kind of that early 80s cheesiness that comes out of the fantasy films, I think that you're right. Like that character and his portrayal of that character is scary as hell.
I mean,
just the gravitas that he has and his physical acting of his body as far as his positioning and his use of like eye contact and just so many elements come together for that character to be so, I think you said diabolical, but just like so believable as that character is absolutely a great call. I guess that the films that I most appreciate his work, I think that although I loved his portrayal in the Jack Ryan films, he was underused horribly, in my opinion. But I will say that part of me says, sorry.
It's okay.
Fuck. Oh, have a breath. I think part of me says my favorite James Earl Jones movie beyond Star Wars is a Field of Dreams. And I think he has such an important role in that film because of who his character is. And he does such a great job of really being this naysayer. And then you see him come from naysayer into this awakening of what's actually going on. And I just think he does that beautifully. And I would just kind of put next to that, I don't think it's an underrated role at all. I think he does the role well. And I think that as a kid, I could definitely identify with that, but that's his role in The Sandlot. And he's just like, right. He's this looming, mean, crazy old man next door. That's like this hermit then, and just has this bad rep in the neighborhood with the kids and turns out to be far from, but I think it's funny because you say how he's so diverse in some of his roles. And I think, again, you go from the Conan film to Sandlot, and my goodness, what a broad range.
Absolutely. And that's that. I think, sadly, what we're seeing right now is so many, and I think it's a great call to make a series like this, Devin, just on looking at the films that these Star Wars actors do, because the older generation, the original trilogy generation of those involved with Star Wars, they are passing away, sadly.
Yeah.
And we're just getting, and it's a great way to honor them. And, you know, he has such a crazy range. And when he passes, we're going to see mourning, not only for people in the film industry, but the television industry, the stage industry, and beyond. He just means a lot. And, you know, I think we would be remiss. I think one of his first films was The Great White Hope, where he played Jack Johnson.
Yes, yes.
The heavyweight fighter. And he played that. He won the Tony for that performance on stage, right? Yeah. And then he got nominated for Academy Award for Best Actor for that. And he was, at the time, the second African-American male performer to be nominated. So just, he's an important person to actors, but specifically to minority actors. And
right.
his performance as Jack Johnson is just wonderful.
Yeah.
And I know that there's been talk of another Jack Johnson film being made, but he is a figure within sports and boxing, but also in civil rights, early 1900s heavyweight champion, that I'm surprised there hasn't been more stories done on him. And his performance as him is extremely memorable. And if you want to see a lot of the things we watch, he's older. And if you want to see a very young James Earl Jones in his prime in terms of youth, you got to see that. It is such a great, great performance and
yeah.
something to be remembered.
I totally agree with that. And just for clarification, it's Jack Jefferson. Jack Johnson's the skinny little white guy singer with his acoustic guitar.
it's Jack Johnson.
It's Jack Jefferson.
Johnson. Nope, Jack Johnson's boxing. All right, everyone listening.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jack Johnson. Is the, yes, there's a scrawny little singer named that too.
Yeah, I'll wait while you get IMDb up, Jeremy. Go ahead.
It's up. Jack Johnson.
Jack Jefferson.
Okay.
Are we looking at the same one? I'm looking at Great White Hope, 1970.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played Jack. He played Jack Johnson.
I'm screenshotting this and sending it to you.
Okay.
What the fuck? What's going on here?
I'm texting you right now too.
Oh, I'm texting you.
Jack Jefferson. What are you looking at? IMDb?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I just texted you,
you bastard.
Wikipedia. Who wins?
Oh, Wikipedia. Well, damn. I can tell you how accurate that is by the crappy history essays I read. Oh my goodness. All right. So, Jack, yes. as a,
yes.
So I totally agree, Jeremy. You bring up something that really, it can't be overstated. And that is one that a lot of the actors that we have grown up with from Star Wars, right? They're entering their sunset, not just of their careers, but in many cases, their lives. We've lost a lot of dear actors in just the last handful of years. And I think that, yes, and what you also added, which I think is great insight, that especially to the African-American community, this will be an especially tough death to overcome and to mourn when that day comes. And let's hope that it doesn't come for a very long while, because
Absolutely.
He is such a treasure when it comes to film and stage acting, as you had mentioned, and even his appearances on the small screen. I think that's one thing that I really appreciate about James Earl Jones, the person, is he takes his craft seriously, but I think that he is so fabulous in recognizing the power that he and his voice has, but also being able to take a joke or make fun of himself or be in sitcom situations.
Yes. Yes. He has this ability because, you know, just his appearances on Frasier and
right.
I think he was even on like a show called Picket Fences. I can
yes,
be wrong.
Yes. Like, no, he was.
I just remember seeing him on those and just his ability to move and blend into films that are heavily dramatic and then into projects, TV that are heavily comedic, and to use his imposing figure, his imposing voice, just those abilities to make us laugh, but to make us feel uncomfortable. It's just astounding. I think, sadly, we think of James Earl Jones and we think of the voice of Darth Vader.
Mm.
You take that off of the table and you look at his filmography and the projects, and you are just left stunned by the sheer amount of work he's done and at the level that he's done this work.
Mm.
And so for those people that are listening that are like, oh, I think I want to check out James Earl Jones and the stuff he's done, you won't be disappointed. He is a unique talent that has left his mark on multiple, like basically, multiple, you know, mediums of film and TV and stage. And it's truly, that's why I love doing this series, is because I'm able to see the broader work of people that I mainly know for just Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun to just kind of poke around into the career of James Earl Jones. And you're right. He's able to do this amazing thing where he moves into comedic roles and comedic performances, just like, you know, Coming to America.
Yeah.
And he kind of plays just that kind of straight, you know, like kind of straight man to Eddie Murphy. You know, I'm the dad, you need to shape up, you're out of control.
Yes.
But he does it so well, and it's so funny. And Eddie Murphy couldn't do the performance he did unless he has that performance by James Earl Jones to kind of bounce off of. And I love that. I love it.
I echo that. And I will say, you know, it's interesting because I'd never thought of this until you had just brought it up. And it's so true, though, that it is almost a disservice to the greater collection of his work that he is probably most identified with Darth Vader, and that there are so many people that they'll have that immediate connection with him that probably haven't seen some of his other work because that's what he's known for. And I would encourage, just like Jeremy encourage you guys, like go check out some of his earlier work, because it is some fantastic work, and just see how he just really commands a presence regardless of the role he's in. His performance on screen, and certainly if you can find some video of him on stage, is just phenomenal work.
Yeah, it's so much fun. So much fun.
Well, hey, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Unmistakably Star Wars and our series Best of the Rest, but the series shall continue. We'd love to hear from you. We've got a queue full of Star Wars actors that we can have some fun going in and seeing some of their other works beyond Star Wars, but we want to hear from you. What are some folks, some actors that you would love for us to delve into? You can just hit us up either on that wretched hive of scum and villainy known as Twitter at UnmistakablySW, or of course you can always email us at UnmistakablyStarWars@gmail.com, and we would love to hear from you. That's going to do it for this time, little tauntauns. We'll see you next time in the digital docking bay. And until then, may the force be with you.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at WeAreEscapePods.com and on Twitter at WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.
This podcast is a production of Be Heard Studios. To learn more about Be Heard Studios and its shows, visit us online at BeHeardStudios.com. Be Heard Studios, creators of diverse listening experiences.